Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Whole Scoop. This is a health and wellness radio show where our guests are always highly credentialed in their fields, and the goal of the program is to present different and sometimes opposite perspectives to allow the listeners to make informed decisions about what might be the right approach for them. I'm your host, Carol Ferraci, a registered licensed dietitian who has practiced for over 30 years. I'm also the founder of Naturally Nutrition, where you can check me out at www.naturallynutrition.inc.com. You know, as a healthcare practitioner, it's important for me to provide you highly qualified guests on a variety of topics in order to promote your own health and wellness. Tonight's show is IBS, migraine. It's not all in your head. Please let me remind you that while our guests are highly credentialed on the topic of discussion, it is always recommended to seek medical advice prior to implementing any and all interventions discussed on this program. The call-in number is 347-855-8894. You can also direct your questions and comments to www.blogtalkradio.com/thewholescoop. Remember to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Blog Talk Radio. Again, the call-in number is 347-855-8894. We will be taking questions later on in the show, and at that time, I'll be calling out the last four digits of your telephone number. If you are calling in with a question, please remember to press the number 1 in order to become part of the queue for questions. And if you're just listening to our show via the telephone, thank you so much, and we welcome that as well. I'm so excited to tell you who we have on the show tonight. We have Jan Patinote, who is a registered licensed dietitian, a consultant dietitian, and she is a LEAP mentor for over 38 years. She has experience in this field and has expertise in emerging field of non-IgE allergy and delayed food sensitivity and elimination diets. Jan has helped thousands of patients with inflammatory conditions such as irritable bowel syndrome, migraine headache, fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue syndrome, Crohn's disease, arthritis, and much, much more. She is changing the face of dietetics with training and or mentoring over 1,500 dietitians in implementing the LEAP diet protocols. She's a sought-after speaker to state and national professional associations, and Jan is also the recipient of the Excellence in Practice Award from the Dietitians in Functional Medicine with the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, and she's been awarded other state and national honors. You can find Jan via phone number 970-456-5086. Joining Jan tonight is Jessica Pearl. She is a registered licensed dietitian and exercise physiologist based in New York City. She received her Bachelor of Science in Kinesiology from the University of Michigan, and she has a Master's of Science in Applied Physiology and Nutrition from Columbia University. She's board certified specialist in sports dietetics, a certified LEAP therapist, a certified strength and conditioning specialist, and most esteemed level training professional. Jessica also holds the distinguished honor of being a fellow of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. Jessica has a background in clinical nutrition and has spent the early part of her career providing medical nutrition therapy for individuals diagnosed with diabetes, obesity, cardiovascular disease, endocrine disorders, gastrointestinal illnesses, and kidney failure, among others. You'll find Jessica at jpearl, P-E-A-R-L, nutrition.com, jpearlnutrition.com. So now let's bring them on. Jessica, are you with us? Jan, are you with us?
I'm with you.
Hey, nice to be here, Carol.
Thank you so much for being here. It's great to have you. I got to tell you, the name of the show, IBS/migraine, it's not all in your head. I had trouble with naming this show because I really just wanted to kind of encompass some of the things that many, many people experience. And as you well know, irritable bowel syndrome, migraine, headaches, I think everyone can relate to those two diagnoses. But given the fact that those are common diagnoses and that people suffer from those greatly for varied reasons, especially like with IBS, IBS encompasses so many different kinds of things and so many other systems that I wanted to kind of get to the heart of the matter in this program and talk about the underlying root cause of inflammation. So maybe we could just start there tonight with just a basic explanation of inflammation and what it means as it relates to these particular diagnoses and some of the other diagnoses that the two of you have such vast experience in, and kind of just there. Jan, do you want to give us a, want to start us off?
Sure. Inflammation is really, I mean, when we're talking irritable bowel syndrome, migraine, headache, so many conditions are, the reason that we have them is because there's inflammation going on in the body. And inflammation is a good thing for some people. If we cut our toe or break our leg, if you have inflammation and you have swelling around that sprain or around that broken leg, it hurts and it tells you not to walk on it because you're going to do further damage. So in some sense, if we cut ourselves and there's inflammation, we know we should treat that cut. We're careful not to bump it and make the cut worse, things like that. So that's acute inflammation. The problem becomes when we have chronic inflammation. And the chronic inflammation is acute inflammation, we have the problem, it's inflamed, it heals, the inflammation goes away, and we're on our way and we're well again. With things like IBS and migraine and fibromyalgia and arthritis, so many conditions, the inflammation is chronic. And the inflammation can be caused by, I always kind of liken it to a bacteria or a virus, and foods also can trigger inflammation. So you have a cut, and what happens is the white blood cells kick into gear, and they might become sensitized. And our white blood cells, it's not actually the white blood cells that are causing the inflammation. It's the mediators that they're dumping into the bloodstream. And as those mediators circulate throughout the body, different mediators trigger different symptoms. The mediators, you know, it's the mediators that are causing the symptoms. And there's cytokines, there's interleukins, there's tumor necrosis factor alpha, there's leukokines, there's histamine, there's prostaglandins. So there's all these mediators circulating throughout the body, and some mediators might cause headaches. Some mediators might cause your intestine to speed up and push through food through faster. Other mediators might cause your intestine to slow down and not work at all. So different mediators for symptoms. Yes.
I'm gonna just interject here for 1 second. When we talk about mediators, maybe we can give the listeners an analogy of what the most common mediator is as it relates to the IgE response, and why when you're talking about chronic responses like you just mentioned, there's different types of mediators and what that really means in the body. So I'm just going to break it down a little bit.
Okay. And I usually try to break it down to allergy as in terms of IgE allergy versus non-IgE food sensitivity, or it's actually non-IgE allergy. And so IgE allergy is immunoglobulin E. Our body recognizes certain things as foreign invaders for whatever reason. Maybe it's for one person it's strawberries, for another person it might be pollen in the trees, for somebody else it might be peanuts. And the classic IgE allergy we're a little more familiar with, it's what we recognize as more common allergy where face swells up, your throat shuts closed, you get rash all over your body, and there's inflammation going on. It's generally more acute, and it's because of your body recognizing the foreign invader and releasing IgE, which triggers mast cell responses on the cells and the tissues. When we have non-IgE...
The mediator in that would be histamine?
It's just histamine. So you've got too much histamine, I mean, so those mast cells are dumping histamines, and then the histamines cause symptoms. With the non-IgE, we're not looking at a classic allergen. It tends to be a more delayed process. It tends to be, the reaction might not happen. Usually with IgE, a reaction is going to happen within an hour, sometimes within seconds. With delayed non-IgE, you might react, in 20 minutes, but you might not react for 3 days. Amazingly, I had a woman who, her migraines were triggered by lettuce. But she could eat lettuce, and she wouldn't get a migraine until 36 hours later. So the non-IgE food sensitivities also trigger mediators, but not necessarily just the histamine. They're triggering cytokines and leukotrienes and other mediators.
Thank you. So when we talk about those particular mediators and we talk about food and how food is interrelated, a person with IBS, a person with Crohn's disease, a person with any gastrointestinal illness, would they be seeing an elevation in those particular mediators too? And one of the most common ones would be cytokines. Would that be correct? And I know that people have heard that word because it's all over the television with drug commercials. So I kind of like to keep things a little bit familiar for people that are listening. So if you've heard the word cytokine, that's what we're talking about. Is that, would you agree, Jan?
And so, yes, some of the meds are trying to dampen, you know, the presence of those mediators through the medication. Well, we can do it through diet as well.
Okay, so when the people that you've seen, and Jessica, jump in here, please.
Of course, yes.
The people that you've seen, would you do they have a combination of medication and elimination of foods, or have you done it just with food? Have you done it with, I mean, do they usually get to you after they've tried certain medications? What can people expect when, let's just say we have the chronic migrainer out there that's had multiple migraines, has tried every pill imaginable, has done, has seen different docs, has done what they feel they need to do, and they're still getting the migraines. Maybe they're not as bad. Maybe they've found different little approaches that can help them now, and they're still dealing with it. What do you normally see? Do you see that, or do you see people that, hey, I just had my migraine for the first time, I don't ever want to have this again? What kinds of things do you guys interject for those particular situations?
Well, for my clients personally, a lot of them, they have had migraines. For most of them, it's really the bloating and the IBS symptoms. And they're not so much on medications, but they're very diet-restricted, more so even than they may need to be. So they're kind of looking to hone in on exactly which foods they need to eliminate to feel better. And they're actually not as interested in which medications they need. They've come to the conclusion that they can definitely improve from food.
Okay. Jan, what about you? I mean, you've seen thousands of patients. You've had to see it all over the board.
I guess I've seen more been-there-done-there patients who've been to 10 different doctors, 8 different doctors. They've tried every diet they know, every medication they can try. You know, maybe some supplements as well, because obviously vitamin mineral deficiencies play a role here. And they've done the stress management, and, you know, and maybe they want off, or the meds aren't being very effective. Or I know we're talking IBS and migraine, but I've had patients that were paying out of pocket over $1,000 a month for medications to control their, you know, their health problems. And they're saying, hey, I'd like to not have to pay $12,000 a year for meds if I can do it with diet alone, get well.
And did they?
Oh, absolutely. It's one of the reasons as a LEAP therapist I love this work, because we've come to expect people to get significantly better within 2 weeks. If they don't, usually it's because they're not sticking with the diet that's recommended.
Do you want to just take a minute and explain LEAP when we're talking about LEAP, what that is and what it means to people? Because, you know, we've got a lot of callers on the board tonight, and I want to remind everybody that if you have a question, to press the number 1 to get in the question queue, so I know that, you know, you have a question and that we're going to get there. Also, let me just take a minute to remind everybody we're talking about IBS and migraine with Jan Patinode and Jessica Pearl. And you can find Jan at 970-456-5086 and Jessica at jpearlnutrition.com. And, of course, I'm Carol Ferraci, your host, and you can find me at www.naturallynutritioninc.com. Okay, Jan, do you want to kind of take a minute, describe LEAP and what that is? And then, Jessica, I think, we have some other kinds of things that people use, too. And I wanted to also talk about some of those different interventions, and maybe you can talk about FODMAPs, too, and how that kind of plays a role in some of this, and maybe some people are already using it.
Exactly, yes. I'd be happy to do that.
Okay. Jan?
I'm happy to explain. I mean, you know, I was a dietitian for, you know, over 30 years, and then I've been a LEAP therapist for 14. And if I can find ways for someone to get rid of their migraine or IBS with standard protocols, absolutely will send. And I would like to, you know, we can talk about those a little bit later, too. A lot of people with migraines don't recognize the role that low blood sugar is playing in skipping meals or not being adequately hydrated, and sometimes they need more fluid, and that's one of their main triggers, because they get dehydrated. So there's a lot of things for migraines we can do without using LEAP, but as all of us are certified LEAP therapists, what LEAP is really a diet protocol based on your own blood work. to help you figure out which foods and chemicals are triggering that mediators to be dumped into your bloodstream, triggering. And then based on your own blood work, we come up with a diet that we think should get you pretty well symptom-free or significantly improved for a couple of weeks. And if we get you much, much better, then we slowly start expanding your diet. So I always like to say the LEAP protocol using the mediator release blood test is a, just a very targeted way to get to the core of what your triggers are instead of trial and error and guessing and, you know, doing a standard elimination diet, because standard elimination diets very often will include rice and maybe spinach and pears and lamb. Well, you know what? I've seen people come back reactive to rice on a very regular basis. Turmeric, mm-hmm. although it's touted as being anti-inflammatory, for some people is very pro-inflammatory. And mm-hmm. everybody's different. Everybody's body is different. And so the test really, you know, having your own blood test really helps us drive what we can do with your diet protocol.
Well, I think to remember, too, what you just said is that everybody's different. And I think if everyone could benefit from the same protocol, then we wouldn't have so many people experiencing all of these things. So it's real important to remember that everyone is different and that different things work for different people. Jessica, don't you agree?
Exactly. That's why I do use FODMAP sometimes, but that's why I really would rather do MRT and LEAP with my clients, because it is so individualized. Everyone reacts. And even with something like FODMAP, which says certain foods are okay or safe and certain aren't, I have clients that can tolerate foods that are on the not okay list and can't tolerate foods that are on the okay list. So I think it might be a good starting point, but I think individualized diet is the number one important thing. So that's why I think that LEAP is so important to do.
Okay. I agree, but you want to just kind of give our listeners an idea of what FODMAPs are, because that's kind of a strange name, and I just want to make sure everybody understands what we're talking about, because you and the three of us can go on forever, but I want to make sure that the people who are listening are taking away something from what we're actually talking about. So can you give a definition of FODMAPs?
Of course. So it is a good starting point for people who might not be as committed to doing LEAP. So FODMAP, it stands for fermentable oligodimonosaccharides and polyols. There are certain carbohydrates in the diet that may be causing symptoms for people. It's fructose, lactose, fructans, galactans, and polyols. It's complex carbohydrates, fruits, the sugar alcohols. So getting rid of those can oftentimes help people alleviate their symptoms. And that might be all they need to do.
Are there common foods that most people see on a daily basis that they would eliminate based on what you just said, like, you know, the sugar alcohol?
That's
a lot of different things.
That's a huge one. I recommend almost everyone eliminate them. They're very hard to digest. They are not natural. So those are often a problem. The complex carbohydrates are a problem. Eliminate the gluten-containing products, and they're okay, but some react to even gluten-free products. So those can be a problem. For fructose and lactose, there are also breath tests they can do. So they can take a hydrogen breath test, and that can tell them that they are intolerant to fructose or lactose. So that's an easy way to single those ones out.
You know, and this is a question for all of us here, is to kind of throw out some of the most common foods attached to what FODMAPs goes after, what they target, because even, you know, the three of us understand sugar alcohols, but maybe somebody listening doesn't know what that is. So what would be a common?
So those are the items in our sugar-free gum and our diet products, the sorbitol, xylitol, mannitol. They end in all. So it's found in your sugar-free gum, diet products. A lot of people think they should be on low-carbohydrate diets, and they buy these sugar-free items, and it's in those.
Because they're not really sugar-free.
They don't have sugar. They have the sugar alcohols, but they're synthetic. They're not real. They're very difficult to digest.
Okay.
Well, and I know I personally was eating them for 2 years, and I had no idea that that was causing my problem.
Right. We got a couple of blog questions in, and I'm going to – I don't usually do this early, but a couple of things I think might help us out. We got one that says, how do you recognize chronic inflammation versus other conditions? Like, can you give us an idea of that? It says, how do you recognize chronic inflammation versus other conditions?
Well, inflammation can, it doesn't just have to be a migraine or IBS. Inflammation can cause many different symptoms. So,
it's tough because at the root of so many of our diseases is inflammation. I mean, the heart disease, when the blood vessels become more clogged, is an inflammatory process. Cancer is related to inflammation. Arthritis. MS is what I was thinking of. Various arthritis. So how do you know if it's inflammation? Sometimes we have, you know, we often say we have subclinical inflammation, and then we have classic inflammation. Now, one test that shows if you've got inflammation is the C-reactive protein. But that's a blood test, and you might not even feel anything. You might be perfectly healthy, but you think about the perfectly healthy people like Jim Fix is a runner or athletes who appear to be perfectly healthy and they die of a heart attack. Well, guess what? That inflammation was there on a subclinical level. Other people recognize inflammation as their arthritis, their GI tract isn't working, they're having diarrhea, they're having pain, they're having malaise, they don't sleep well at night, sinusitis is obviously inflammatory condition, inflammatory bowel disease, you're talking inflammation, but arthritis in the joints may be inflammation as well. So a lot of us, I mean, we tend to walk around, everybody has some level of inflammation, but it's how many straws on the camel's back, and so we may have subclinical inflammation until we get into a bad diet, plus antibiotics, plus a lot of stress, plus, you know, maybe more alcohol, plus some other medication. And we get too many straws on the camel's back, and all of a sudden we're feeling the symptoms of inflammation as pain, as IBS, as migraine. But until we reach that threshold, we may not notice the inflammation is there.
Okay. Jessica, you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, it definitely can be multifactorial, and it might always, like Jan said, it might not always be something that you can exactly see. I'm having a migraine, or I'm bloated, I have IBS. It can be something like in your heart, or so it's hard to...
If someone has multiple issues like diabetes, hypertension, meaning, you know, high blood pressure, and then gets a migraine and comes to one of you and says, you know, I'm really just tired of all this and I just don't feel well. What can I do? Have you found good, solid, positive results with just eliminating the food, or have you had to do other things as well, or is there a culprit that you absolutely eliminate first, and is it gluten? Is it artificial sweeteners? What do you tend to do first, and how do you generally take that on?
Well, since as a dietitian, my sober practice only is diet. So if they come to me and they're going on the elite diet and their migraine improves, then that's great. Maybe that it was just food related, but it might not be food related. It might be something else, and they might need to go to a doctor, and they possibly need to be on medication. So I think it's good to try one thing, and if that doesn't work, move on and try something else.
Dan?
To add to that is I think that even as a dietitian, as a elite practitioner, we're finding that, you know, more cutting-edge dietitians are becoming very integrative in our work. And so, you know, be all, end all, the LEAP diet is very much about diet, and most of the time it's very effective. I can't fix somebody's health if their health problem is also caused because of the water damage and the mold growing in their house or in the drop ceiling. And so I'm thinking of a few examples of patients that I've had that maybe only got, you know, 50% better. Well, and it turned out that they had, you know, major dysbiosis and candida overgrowth within their gut and our small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. Well, diet alone isn't necessarily going to fix that. Or another gentleman that actually was interesting, on his MRT test, we tested for 120 foods and 30 chemicals. He had come back fairly reactive to yeast and mushrooms and candida albicans, And I remember years ago we used to do blue cheese as well. And all of a sudden it's like, to me, that's a yellow flag waving saying, why is this person reacting to all this fungus-related food? The whole fungus family. Yeast and mushrooms are related. We had one gentleman really didn't get significantly better on his leaf diet, and we're trying to figure out why, but he had been reactive to all these molds. And so we started asking, well, what about your home, where you work? Is there any water damage? Is there any mold? Is there mildew on the windows, mildew in the bathroom? He says, well, I've got water damage that I can see. There was a leak in the ceiling, in the drop ceiling above my desk at work. And we said, really, well, why don't you check it out? So he gets up on top of his desk, pushes up the drop ceiling tile, and it was filled with mold inside of there, a few feet above his head.
Wow.
And, like, all the diet change in the world isn't going to fix the fact that he's living in a toxic environment. So, you know.
So what you're saying, go ahead. I mean, I want you to continue with that because I think it's real important for people to understand that while we're talking about diet and while we're talking about chronic inflammation, if you're exposed chronically to something, you're going to set off that internal inflammatory response in your body, as Jan just described, and as she just said, all the food in the world, eliminating all the food in the world isn't going to solve that. So how do you teach people to become more astute with their surroundings? Because most of us don't pay attention. Most of us go, oh, well, yeah, just like this guy just did. Oh, yeah, well, there's a leak in my office. I didn't think anything of it. How do you heighten the awareness of that so that people can put the whole picture together for how it relates to their own health?
I think if I have a client, and you know, a lot of them have been there, done that. They've tried all sorts of things. But if I'm not getting them well with diet, then I start asking the questions. And you know, some people actually do. I used to do home care, and you know, might do a home visit, or we just start asking the questions. If I see somebody with lots of chemical reactions, my first question is, what is your, you know, what do you do for a living? And it's interesting how many people with lots of chemical reactions have been things like painters and auto mechanics, or they work under a hood in a laboratory all day with chemicals, you know, and just or hairdressers and just have a lot of chemical exposure. So, I mean, I think we have to ask those questions. If somebody just started getting migraines 3 years ago and you start asking about lifestyle and what changes have been in your life, we had one woman had recently moved into a trailer while they were building a new house, and they're living in an older trailer that had so much formaldehyde in all the paneling. It was a formaldehyde that was a trigger for her migraine. And until she got out of that trailer house, you know, she didn't get well again. So I think we just have to ask the questions, let people be aware that, you know, using a bunch of toxic chemicals, and just because it's advertised on TV doesn't mean it's good for you.
Exactly. Okay. I was just going to say also, ask the right questions, because it might not be diet. I always ask about lifestyle, what they do, where they work, because there could be other things in their life that they're not uncovering. So we can't just ask about diet and eating habits. There could definitely be more to uncover.
Mm-hmm. But let's kind of get back to where we were with inflammation and how it relates to these particular diagnoses. And now that we've said, okay, there are other factors, how does food play a role in actually counteracting some of this? Remember, the show is it's not all in your head. And the reason that I named it not all in your head is because a lot of people go to the docs and they go, hey, you know, we can't find anything wrong with you, so maybe you got to think about maybe getting some counseling or something. And they feel like they're crazy when in fact they're really not. So how do you guys help with that component? Because that is, I hear that all the time.
I mean, I have to tell you that I had symptoms for years, and I finally said, how is nobody connecting any of this to food? Because oftentimes it is directly connected to food. So just identifying which foods you're sensitive to and eliminating them can often resolve your symptoms of inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
I think we recognize that there's so many individual differences. I've known people that get by their whole life eating just garbage like hot dogs and ramen noodles and, you know, white bread. They'll go out and work 12-hour days and seem to function quite well and amazingly well. And it's like, is that mind over matter? I think sometimes it is. I mean, our belief system about getting sick does play a role. and so I see why doctors are doing that, but so often, again, the clients all the time that have been there, done that, and the doctors are saying, I don't know what else to do for you, you know? So, I think the role that it's obviously migraines is in your head, but the IBS issues, the food triggers inflammatory responses. And for some people, it triggers the intestines to move faster. For some people, it triggers the intestines to have more pain and be more sensitized. And so, it's like straws on a camel's back. Maybe the person that's been eating junk food for 25 years gets away with it for 40 years, and then all of a sudden their health starts to deteriorate, and their body has become sensitized to things that didn't bother them before. And why do we become sensitized to things? I think some of it is genetics. Some of it is environment. Some of it might be whether you're born, how much the good probiotics are in your system, how good is your diet in general, did you get the good bugs in your system as a child versus growing up in a spotlessly clean, germ-free house?
Mm-hmm.
Were you used to a lot of chemicals, as a child versus somebody that wasn't? What is your stress factor? Are you getting enough vitamin D? We know vitamin D plays such a huge role in inflammatory responses. And if you work indoors all day long and live in Minnesota and never go outside in the winter, of course, you can't get enough vitamin D that way. And if it's not in your diet or being supplemented, vitamin mineral deficiencies surely cause part of the problems with inflammation.
So what you're saying then is there's just not one approach to food and nutrition as it relates to the individual. Everything needs to be looked at. And, interesting that you said stress, because we just got a blog question, IBS and stress, how does diet relieve stress? Does diet relieve stress, or does stress play a role in the inflammatory factors? And then I know that I've seen people that come in completely stressed out, but their diet also needs to be cleaned up. So, we work it in stages. I don't know about you guys, but do you agree with that? How do you deal with the stress component of, because that's environmental to me.
Yeah, and I think stress definitely exacerbates IBS. Symptoms can flare up during times of stress. So a lot of the treatment also involves meditation and things like that to maybe calm you and exercises you can do to relieve stress in your life, because that can help deal with these symptoms.
And I think, too, sometimes it's what came first, the chicken or the egg.
Exactly.
5 days a week surely will create stress in your life if you're afraid you might lose your job because you've missed so much work, or worrying about whether or not you're going to make it to the next restroom because you might have diarrhea and all of a sudden you have to be in a restroom now and there's no restrooms in sight. That's very, very stressful to live that way. And so,
or you can head up off your desk and you got to get to work, and that's stressful because you're going to be late for work or you might have to miss work.
Exactly.
And if we take that person, let's just take that person for a minute, okay? The average Joe in today's world, we live in a very fast-paced society, and everybody has to have things now, or has to be somewhere now, or had to, they're out in traffic and we have road rage because everybody had to be there 5 minutes ago or 10 minutes ago. And that stress factor just continuously builds up that internal inflammatory response, but at the same time, while they're trying to get to where they're going and they're already 10 minutes late or they're about to be 10 minutes late and they're not really happy about any of that, what are they doing? They're eating. They're eating something from McDonald's, or they're eating something from somewhere else, or they're pulling out some Hot Pockets or something or another that they heated up in the microwave and they threw in the car just to eat on the way to work. How does that particular scenario, when you take today's average person, how does that influence how they're feeling, what their diagnoses are with irritable bowel syndrome, migraine, chronic gastrointestinal illnesses, any kind of inflammatory response? Like, Jan, you even mentioned MS. You got to wonder at certain points, if this is a chronic situation and it continuously happens, Crohn's disease, arthritis, all of that, you know, where do you start with the average person in today's world? Because they can't just change their lifestyle, even though we're talking about the LEAP diet and we're talking about lifestyle, eating, and performance. That's what LEAP stands for. And it is a lifestyle change, but some people just can't seem to do that as quickly as maybe they need to. So where do you start? How do you do that? Let's just take that as a case study. And let me remind people, as you're calling in, I see a lot of people on the board. Let's press 1 if you have questions. We're going to take some more blog questions. We got a couple of others as it relates to migraines and a couple of other things. So please remember to press the 1. Go ahead, Jan.
Well, I think the stress issue, I mean, one of the things we have identified is that cytokines increase stress as well. And so if you're eating a food that actually, you can be eating foods that are triggering your anxiety or triggering your stress. We've had some success with Tourette's syndrome, that, you know, the foods were triggering those symptoms. So sometimes it's change your diet and we reduce the cytokines. And I had one woman call me 7 days into her LEAP diet saying, what kind of calm pill did you give me? Because I've never been this relaxed in 20 years. And it was just that there were foods that were actually triggering her anxiety as well. So it's kind of a, you know, it goes both ways that, I mean, we can work at stress in our life. If, you know, rushing in traffic makes you crazy, you find a method of getting out of the house earlier so you have the extra time. And you just make that a priority to do that. But on the other hand, we have seen that food and reactive foods can also trigger anxiety and more stress. The other thing that a lot of people don't recognize with anxiety and anger and frustration is low blood sugar. They leave the house in the morning without eating breakfast. They're driving home at 5 o'clock and they haven't eaten anything since 11, 12 o'clock earlier in the day. When blood sugar levels drop too low, all of a sudden we get more irritable and that doesn't contribute any, you know, to it as well. Sometimes we need to be eating more of something.
So go ahead. I'm sorry. I thought you were finished. Go ahead.
Oh, no, isn't it? You can continue. I think the difficult thing with stress is that whatever is triggering these symptoms of IBS or migraines, we get stressed about it. And so it's hard to improve, even if we're changing our diet, because we're stressed that we're sick. And so it is kind of a vicious circle, because maybe sometimes we need a lifestyle change to decrease stress in our life, because it's hard to calm your symptoms when you're stressed about having symptoms or life. So that stress makes it more difficult.
You're right. I mean, so if we were to break this down, I mean, and you look at it, it is a vicious cycle. What we eat isn't exactly the best for us. It will trigger an automatic response of a cytokine response, one of those mediators we talked about earlier that causes that internal inflammatory response. What we do for a living, or trying the stress factors to which we're exposed, and trying to get where we need to go, what we need to do, blah, 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 all of that on a daily basis will trigger another stress response that could also trigger the cytokine response that will keep that internal inflammatory response initiated. Then we also have the lack of sleep. We forgot, we haven't even talked about the lack of sleep. So when we get into the lack of sleep and we look at that whole thing and how that plays a role, and as you mentioned earlier, Jan, with the low blood sugar levels, and when you have the low blood sugar levels, that just creates even more of a stress response internally. So what I would like to do at this point is say, all right, so given all of that, everybody is aware of that, everybody feels that, everybody sees that and can relate to that now, what would be a first step that somebody might want to do? Out of those particular factors, lack of sleep, change of environment, being familiar with your environment, as that was a wonderful example on the mold situation, you know, what would be the first step that they do? Is there, and I'm going to go back to the one of the original questions, are there particular foods, and Jan, you mentioned this earlier, where there are major food culprits. I think those are the words that you said. Those are major food culprits. Can they start to eliminate that, even if they just feel slight difference, which might bring them into being able to recognize that there is a difference? Because with all of this going on, with the way people are today and their lives, they may not even be able to recognize that there is a difference. So what would be like the top 10 food or maybe not top 10, maybe top 5 food culprits, at least for people to be able to identify and start to think about eliminating?
Okay, one of the things, yeah, to recognize the difference between, you know, LEAP and MRT as a protocol versus FODMAPs. FODMAPs is a protocol to help with IGF and malabsorption. LEAP is a protocol to reduce inflammation, and the FODMAPs diet isn't reducing inflammation. FODMAPs diet isn't going to do a thing for migraine headaches, you know, and so we're really looking at FODMAPs being really a GI-based treatment, whereas LEAP is looking at overall inflammation. But for migraine headaches, I mean, some classic things are amines, fermented foods, aged cheese, smoked meat, things that contain too much amines, tyramine, phenylethylamine, octopamine. And a lot of times people with migraines, if the food smells funky or off to you, it may well be. So the amines is a big category of foods that's a very common trigger for migraines. That includes things like the red wine, aged cheeses. And anybody with migraines, you know, if you're attempting to get rid of them, there's a lot of classic dietary things.
Dan, are you with us?
Chocolate. Caffeine rebound is a very common trigger where somebody says, oh, I need my caffeine, otherwise I get migraines. Well, maybe the reason you're getting migraines is because you become addicted to it. And once you slowly, gradually wean off all of your caffeine, the caffeine stops being a trigger for you. And then you might use it occasionally to ward off a migraine, a half a cup of coffee when you feel a migraine coming on, but you only do it once a week. That's not a caffeine addiction. But also things like, you know, some of the migraine medications also contain caffeine. And if you don't get your caffeine fix every, you know, 12 to 17, 18 hours, that can actually trigger a migraine. So the caffeine piece of it is a very common thing to look out for. Jessica, what are some of the other
In terms of FODMAPs to get rid of, I would say the artificial sweetener also. Caffeine is a problem. It is causing symptoms for a lot of people. Sometimes they have to wean off of it, but caffeine can be a trigger for digestive problems. Even decaf coffee in itself. The fructose can be a problem. A lot of times wheat and even all complex carbohydrates can be an issue. And the fructose, that's why I recommend people get the breath test.
Let's just say we're going to take somebody and we're going to say, okay, fine, I feel like crap, I've had this, but you know, for me, I always tell people, you know, there's the caffeine, I also look at the inflammatory response as it relates to sugars and not necessarily sugar alcohols, but artificial sweeteners and where they are with the artificial sweeteners. I look at the sugar alcohols as well, glucose levels in general and where they are as it relates to how they're feeling. So you know, when I'm looking at those five culprits, I also, the big factor for me too, when I look at it with individuals and they have arthritis, I immediately go, Jan, this is one of yours. I know it is. You know, the arthritis factor as it relates to some of the chemicals in the foods. Remember, you want to talk about that for a minute, just to give people an awareness that some of their arthritic-like symptoms might be related to some of the foods that they're eating.
Oh, arthritis. I mean, I personally, when I did LEAP for myself, out of just more professional curiosity, I had like just mild achiness, mild stiffness, you know, occasional stiffness went away. I didn't even notice it went away until I said, I'll forget this diet. I'm going to eat whatever I want. It was over the holidays and I was traveling. And I said, I'll eat whatever I want. And all of a sudden I get this stiffness back and I'm going, oh, I'm hurting today and I'm aching. And I definitely notice it now. And, you know, some of my triggers, I've recognized what my triggers are, but they're different for every single person. So for
exactly.
me, that you stay away from the foods that are my triggers may do nothing for you. Now, there's a body of research that really suggests that the nightshades, and there's enough people that do find that the nightshades, the foods that contain selenine tend to be severe arthritis triggers for some, for other people not at all. And those are like potatoes, tomatoes, eggplant, peppers, red pepper, hot pepper, cayenne pepper. So the nightshades can play a role for some people, definitely not everybody. And that's the interesting thing. Everybody is different. I had one gentleman with chronic sinusitis, and his worst trigger was the wild-caught salmon he was eating twice a week, thinking it was good for him.
And that's why I think the most important thing to do is that they complete a food symptom diary. They just write down everything they're eating. At least 3 days, I recommend my clients do more. And then you can see what they're eating, how they feel, and then also the symptom survey. So they rate their symptoms, and once they change their diet, they do another symptom survey, and they can see if they improve. But I think a food diary is very important because everyone is so different. And triggers for one person are not the triggers for another person.
Well, and I think that's really great advice in terms of writing everything down. I mean, I know it works. It works for everyone. But I'm talking about the person that doesn't even realize that this is happening to them. So at what point do they, you know, they're not going to, like, pick up a diary and just start writing it down, but they might, if they're aware, and that's really the premise of the show, to get people to be aware. And so if they're not feeling well and they're feeling like crap, like the guy that was triggering with his salmon, you know, how does he get to know? Because you said something really important there, Jan. He was eating the salmon because he thought it was so good for him, and it generally is a decent food to eat. So how does one become aware or learn to become aware of the things that they're doing that they know could be so good for them, or that they're were ingrained to know that these are really good foods? How do they start with that? And I want to remind everybody that's calling, press 1 to ask a question and get in the queue. So
I mean,
how do they do that?
Of course, I'd say if you've been doing, you know, if you've done the research, if you've looked into information, you've tried the migraine diet, you also may have ruled out celiac disease. We haven't mentioned that. That's for a segment of the population. It's truly celiac disease. It's not IBS, and celiac might be causing the migraine. But, I mean, of course, I would say find a certified sleep therapist to help you through the process. You know, that's our specialized training, is how to be really good food, life, diet detectives and help you narrow it down, help you figure out what the symptoms are, what the cause is, and just the education that, you know what, you might not think your sinusitis is related to your arthritis, is related to your migraines and your diarrhea, but they can all be inflammatory symptoms.
Okay. We got a blog question, a couple of blog questions. One is saying, I have MS, which is associated with inflammation. I think, can my foods influence my symptoms? Did you not mention that just slightly, Dan? Do you want to kind of elaborate that on that a little bit? Because that's something that most people don't think about as it relates to inflammation and foods.
Absolutely. I've got one sleep therapist who has MS herself. And so she's really been working. She would love to put together some research. We have had, I mean, and it depends on how far the MS has progressed, how much damage is there. But we have had many, many patients who their MS progression stops in its tracks once they find out what their inflammatory foods were, stop eating them, and possibly get more vitamin D. Vitamin D deficiency is so rampant with MS. So that should be ruled out immediately first. But so you got to look at overall nutrition for somebody with MS. But once you look at the overall nutrition, we've had people on their LEAP protocols. A couple of months ago, we actually had a patient that she went back to the doctor. He did the scans, and he said all evidence of your MS is 100% gone. They couldn't even identify any of the plus anymore. But this was about 2 or 3 years into some, you know, very significant diet changes. So MS doesn't have to be a life sentence. Now, do we have research to prove that this is happening? No, it's purely anecdotal. But on many, many patients, and Elizabeth Yarnell is one of the certified sleep therapists that's done a lot of MS work. And her website is Elizabeth Yarnell, YARNELL, just as it sounds, .com. And she's done a lot of MS work research. If somebody wants to, you know, pick up the ball and throw some money into research, we'd love to do it because we would love to prove what we're seeing that we believe is 100% true.
And I think for people to realize that these symptoms are connected to food, because some people don't. Like you said, Carol, how are they going to know to have a food diary, and how are they know to do that? Because the awareness that these conditions and these symptoms are related to food is not always out there. I've been to a lot of doctors myself that didn't connect my symptoms to food. So I think increasing awareness and telling people that this option is out there and they should consult with a dietitian, that's a good start in itself.
Okay. And that's a great response. Thank you. You know, let me go to the board here. We got one question. Let me see what we've got. A couple of questions. Let me see. We got caller 0840.
Hello.
Hello. Hi.
Hello.
On the air.
Hi. My name's Kathy, and I have suffered for, I'll be 56 in a couple weeks here, and I have suffered with migraines since I was in my early 20s. I went to several doctors, neurologists. They tell me nothing's wrong. And then the one doctor's answer was, well, I can give you oxycodone since you have chronic pain. I don't want oxycodone in my system. I don't want to be an addict. What? I know I've been listening to the show, and you've given a lot of good advice, but for someone who's had 30 years of migraines and doctors saying there's nothing wrong, where do you suggest I go now?
And the oxycodone is just masking the pain. It's not getting to the underlying problem. I would look into MRT LEAP. It could definitely be food related. I would try that route.
Dan?
Yes, I agree. It's not necessarily an easy protocol, but I've had so many clients, 20, 30 years, 40 years, chronic migraine, 5 days a week. Had one gentleman who, you know, his chronic migraine, he said, I had no idea that my chronic migraines were being caused by the rice and the soy I was eating. And this guy owned Japanese restaurants and ate rice and soy every single day, but he didn't have migraines every single day because it was a combination of foods and it was a dose-related relationship. So he said, I would have never figured that out on my own. A dietitian colleague of mine that migraines for many, many years, when she figured out that even a few pieces of lettuce would trigger her migraine 36 hours later, she said, there's no way without the testing and keeping my food symptom diaries and paying attention that I would have ever figured out that lettuce was a trigger. But what she said was very interesting. She says, I now know, you know, if I do eat some lettuce, my migraines come on within a matter of seconds. She says, I go from no migraine to full-blown migraine in seconds with lettuce, and that's how my lettuce migraine comes on. But she says, but if I get into MSG, my migraines come on differently. So different foods trigger different mediators, but those mediators were still causing actually different types of migraines. So you can, I mean, you can look up certifiedleaptherapist.com, or you can email me, jan@certifiedleaptherapist.com, or Google Certified Leap Therapist in, you know, California or in your town or in your zip code.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you're saying Leap Therapist?
Leap, L-E-A-P.
Okay.
Leap Therapist. And you can start with your state or narrow it down to your city. And there are some Leap Therapists that do work telecommute as well. I've had usually 1,000 patient phone consult clients. And so some work by phone, some will see you face-to-face, some take insurance for their consult, some do not. So there's no, you know, one way of doing this. But if you look for Certified Leap Therapist, see if you can't find somebody locally, or if you can't find somebody locally, you can email me, jan@certifiedleaptherapist.com, and I can try to find you somebody. And I'll try to make a good match for you, too. Some leap therapists specialize in MS, and some specialize in migraines, and other ones specialize in more GI issues.
It's funny you say MS, because when I went through my whole battery of tests, that was one of the things they kept saying. You're showing lots of signs of MS. Well, I don't have MS. I don't, thank God. But,
right.
You know, they, and like you said, they just want to give you pain pills. When they can't find a reason for it, they just want to give pain medicine.
Yep. And one other thing, too, is you can always rule celiac disease. About 3% of people that have had migraines when they go gluten-free, or celiac patients that have been identified, about 3% of celiac patients were migraine patients and got migraine-free after their celiac diagnosis and they went gluten-free.
Oh, okay. Well, I thank you, ladies. Listening to your show has been very helpful tonight. I thank my good friend that told me about the show. I'm a first-time listener, and it was very interesting and helpful.
Thank you for calling in.
Thank you for that. And we've got another blog question, and it is on migraine, and I just lost it for a minute. Oh, different types of migraines. What types of migraines are linked to IBS, And how do you distinguish a neurological migraine from a diet migraine?
Well, I would say if you go on your LEAP diet and your migraine does not resolve and you're following the protocol exactly, and then that would be the time to explore other options. So it might not be diet related.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, I really think all migraines are neurological. And so, and there is an inflammatory process. Now, obviously, you know, our hormones might play a role in our migraines. I know one woman with classic allergies that when the, you know, if the air pressure changes too significantly, that can be a trigger for her. But taking antihistamines before the weather barometric, big barometric changes seems to block the migraines for her. So there's lots of other tips and techniques. Magnesium deficiency, CoQ10 deficiency, very, very common with migraine. So sometimes there's supplement programs that are needed to be added on top of the LEAP protocol. There's a very good YouTube webinar that was done by Joan and Pat Hogan, H-O-G-A-N. Pat and Joan are a husband-wife team. He's a neurologist. She's a certified LEAP therapist. And they did one, and they actually created a magnesium CoQ10 supplement and helped formulate it, one that didn't have a bunch of other chemicals and garbage in it, through Douglas Labs. And if you look that up, you can Google it through YouTube. They actually did a nice hour-long seminar. You might take a look at that, too.
And sometimes just if I'm dehydrated, I'll get a migraine. Look at something like that. You could have a vitamin deficiency. You could just be dehydrated.
Okay, great. Let's go to the board, take another caller. We got a couple minutes left. 6121.
Hi.
Hi.
A colleague of my husband's who suffers from a lot of sinusitis problems and just different sorts of like head congestion. So would you all basically recommend then that he go to a LEAP therapist? And you've talked so much about so many different things. Can you tell me, like, is it basically just starting off with a consultation and a maybe the food diary, or do you do blood testing? Can you kind of give me an idea what it would involve?
Sure. I mean, any good test is going to first do an assessment. So we'll have you fill out a couple of forms, a symptom survey. We'll get a health history from you. We'll find out if you're a good candidate or not, because if you're not able or willing to do some very significant diet changes and stop eating out every day and get off the junk food and the fast food, it's not going to work for you. So, and if you're not a good candidate for this, we don't want to waste your money on a blood test that's not going to help you. So the dietitian, a good LEAP therapist, they will assess if you're a good candidate. If you're a good candidate, then it's a matter of getting the blood test done. When those results come back, you sit down with the therapist, and you come up with your individualized LEAP diet, which is going to be different than anybody else's LEAP diet. And that's really the protocol. And you'll probably do, you know, 3 to 5 hours worth of consultations over the course of 2 to 6 months. And some people are, you know, it takes a little bit more work and it's a little harder to get them to the well point. Other people get 50% improved, and then we got to figure out what else is going on, like vitamin D deficiency or lifestyle or something. Some people have amazing results in 2 weeks, and they're off and running and thrilled to have their life back again. So,
right.
You know, so it's not the same for everybody.
Right. We're running low on time. Did we answer your question?
Yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. We're running low on time, ladies, but we've got one question on the blog that hasn't been answered yet. Do you mind if I take it?
That's fine.
Sure.
It says, my husband is in his 80s with dementia and doesn't walk very well. Can eliminating certain foods help this?
The thing with dementia, I used to have a lot of dementia patients. The thing with eliminating foods with dementia is a lot of times they're not eating that much and they do forget to eat and they don't want to eat so much. So I'm cautious with eliminating foods with that population, and I don't know definitively if that would help him.
Yeah, my background, if you want to email me at jan@certifiedleaptherapist, I actually did a journal article 20 years ago now on dementia and depression in the elderly. And I don't suspect that LEAP would have great results. I just don't know. I don't know that we've even had any case histories, or that I don't recall anybody saying, oh, yeah, I've used it for dementia and it's helped. So as far as I know, I would say probably not. But there are other things. Vitamin mineral deficiencies are very common with depression and dementia. So at least let's rule out B12 deficiency, B vitamin deficiencies, protein deficiency. There's a lot of things that can trigger dementias, and it's just nutrient deficiencies, you know. So there are possible things that you could do. I don't think that LEAP would be the first thing I would consider by any means, though.
Okay, great. We have one more question on the board. Can you handle it for a couple minutes here?
I'm not going anywhere.
That would be caller 4977.
Hi, how you doing, Carol?
How are you?
Good. My question is, what's one thing that the average person could do to reduce inflammation in their daily lives?
I would say eat clean and get rid of so much junk.
That's actually
good. Is that what you said, Jan?
I would say, eat clean. Fruits, real vegetables, real meat, real protein, nuts, seeds, good oils, good fats, and off the highly processed fast food, junk food, you know, highly processed stuff. I would say that's probably the first thing. I mean, what do our bodies run on? They run on whatever we're putting in our mouths, and we don't expect our car to run on garbage gas. We can't. Our bodies run well on garbage food.
Right. Right.
Yeah. I would say the same thing, get rid of as many processed foods. And, you know, if you look at the ingredient list, and there's all these words listed and ingredients that you've never heard of and you can't even pronounce, that might not be the best thing to eat. I say eat as natural as possible as well.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
With that, I'm going to say thank you to Jan and to Jessica. And, again, you can reach Jan at 970-456-5086. And Jessica at jpearlnutrition.com. Thank you, ladies, for joining us tonight. Thank you, everyone, for calling in and for blogging in. We had a pretty active board tonight on both ends. I want to remind everybody we're going to be back in 2 weeks, and at that point in time, we're going to be talking with a couple of pretty interesting people. And we're going to be talking about mindfulness and intrinsic motivation. Maybe you can control your own destiny. Tracy Stoppler is going to join us with Stephanie Sicali. If you've been listening to the show, you'll remember Stephanie from our autism show. And Tracy is a dietitian fitness trainer who's also specializing in mindfulness. So I think this would be a great show for how to pull it all together and how to look at different things. Remember that we are available via Instagram and on Facebook, and we have. I want to also remind everybody that we are taking some questions via the Facebook page as well. And so, feel free if you've got some questions or you've got some issues that you want to kind of see us cover, please let us know. Again, thank you so much, everybody, and have a great night, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Thank you, Mitch.
Thank you.
We're going to do a recap. I think we're going to have a recap.
I think so.
Oh, okay, I'm still here, right?
I'm still here, right?
Maybe she's wrapping up something on the show.
Oh, I think she's calling.